This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's Thursday. That means it's time to bring in Brock Heward for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
Morning, Brock. How are you now?
Oh, Paulie, I'm doing great. How are you this morning?
Not so bad myself. Why will the number of NFL players opting out of this season be less than their NBA and baseball counterparts?
Guaranteed money, Paul. Guaranteed money. And it's something that we have talked about an awful lot over the last, couple CBA conversations, collectively bargained agreements, whether or not these players are going to be able to scratch and claw for more actual guaranteed dollars like their peers in the NHL and the MLB and the NBA have. And that answer is no. No, there's still guarantees. There's roster bonus guarantees. There's signing bonus guarantees. But as far as the entirety of your contract being guaranteed, it is not. You have got to pay to play in order to get paid. Now, I do understand the Players Association and the league right now are in some conversations about those guys that do want to and trying to negotiate an ability to opt out, that do not feel safe, that have health concerns with their family at home and otherwise, and want to be able to opt out and still get paid. That is going to be very much negotiated, but I think the majority of guys are going to play. And the 80-20 rule is more clear and evident in the NFL than any of the other leagues, that 80% of the guys make, 20% of the money. And the other 20%, the very top, make 80% of the dough. So the 80% of the workforce, as I can imagine, with 2 weeks heading into camp here, are anxious to get back to work and try to get their money.
The discussions about the escrow payment, and if it's a little complicated, but the essence of it is that the league has talked to the Players Association about holding 35% of player salaries in an escrow account. And the idea is everybody expects this year's football revenue to be significantly lower than it's been in past years. Everybody thinks that that's probably going to happen, and to offset a contraction of the salary cap, you might need to save a little this year. Otherwise, essentially, you're going to pay next year for the financial costs of this year. I can't imagine any player is going to be okay with that. I think that
generally
the NFL has been, you let those guys deal with it when they have to deal with it. Do not take anything away. Like, I've got to get what's mine right now.
The career is, 3.5 to 4 years on average maximum. So, I've got to get mine, and I got to get mine now. And if you want to flatten in the salary cap the following year and everything's based off revenues, and, if there's got to be a little hit the following year to those big money dudes that aren't going to get $35 million, they're going to get $30 million, fine. But for the guys making league minimum, the guys that need the benefits, the guys that are looking for the 401k, the guys that are just trying to scratch and claw to stay in the league for those 3, 4, 5, 6 years, that's going to be a resounding no. I think that should be 100%. We are not doing that. We're going to pay, play this season, and we're going to get paid this season, and we're going to take that risk that you're asking us to take for this season. And if that means a little bit lesser in the salary cap, and you can revise that in years to come, that's fine. But we're going to take this risk. We're going to get paid now.
Question two. With football in this precarious position, Brock, why is Joe Burrow on the front and center of your mind?
Yeah, Danny, I've chatted with a bunch of different people over the last few weeks, and there, it's great debate and great argument about where this thing is going to go. And Joe Burrow comes to my mind because people will say, you just can't do it. You just cannot take the risk. You cannot, put that responsibility on the players, for just one life. You know, if one person gets really sick in this, it's one too many. And when I think of Joe Burrow comes to my mind on the other side of that argument, and that is, if there was no football season last year, there would be really no Joe Burrow that any of us know of. Joe Burrow was a highly thought of recruit out of Ohio, went to Ohio State, didn't work there for a couple years, ends up transferring to LSU, has a ho-hum year, and all of a sudden, if it was not his final year of eligibility, he wouldn't have got drafted, probably would not have gotten to the NFL. Instead, he got surrounded by a tremendous staff, unbelievable talent. LSU has arguably the greatest season in the history of college football, and I think I could really argue that Joe Burrow had the greatest season for any college quarterback ever if he wins the Heisman, the national championship, and ultimately becomes the number one pick in the draft. What does that mean? That means that a GoFundMe site that raised over $250,000 back in his home state of Ohio that he raised. That means, you know, millions of dollars that he is, yes, going to make, but there's no question he's going to pour back into his community. So Joe Burrow just comes to mind as when, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, you know, what's one season, put this in the books, put it behind you. Well, for high school seniors to be coming up, there's many of them, Danny, in my opinion, that are waiting on a college scholarship and maybe the first in their family to ever go to college in the same course of their family and some of the history in that family and get a college degree and set themselves up. And without a senior year and that opportunity to play, they may never realize that opportunity and dream. So it's complicated. It's not easy. These decisions for the people in leadership are going to be extremely, extremely hard. But there are a lot of lives on all sides of this that are greatly impacted if there's going to be no football.
Yeah, take a look at the NFL. I'm curious as to how the NFL would evaluate potential prospects for a draft if this is a shortened season or if there's no season either.
That comes into play. Comes into play if, you know, this thing gets moved to spring. And if indeed the NFL is going to plow ahead here and play this fall, and all of a sudden college football is in the spring, then what do the Trevor Lawrences do and others, Justin Fields around the country, that are going to be first-round picks? Are they going to play in the spring and not get drafted? Or is all that going to sort itself out? We do have time. I'm not in any sort of panic as far as any of that stuff goes with the NFL and college players to be, but just for the here and the now. And what I continue to hear from the WIAA and the athletic directors around the state of Washington is they're looking to push everything into January. If there's going to be really shortened seasons with no championships and no tournaments, and for kids looking to to get that college scholarship to set themselves up for the rest of their lives to have an opportunity they would otherwise never have to get into many of these scholarships, I sure hope those decisions are made, you know, with that full course of just background and knowledge of the number of people that truly will be impacted.
Question number three. There is a Jim Trotter article this morning where players across the NFL talked about the coaching styles that they like. And Richard Sherman may have taken a shot at Pete Carroll. Here is the quote from the piece. Carroll has a way of coaching, a way of talking to his coaches, a way of having his coaches talk to his players. They don't do the whole rah-rah, curse you out style. He would never hire a coach like that. Kyle is similar in that he has a philosophy of the best man plays. He doesn't care about your draft position or any of that. He's more of a straight shooter than Pete. Pete has a way of making everybody feel sure everybody feels good, making sure he pushes buttons with certain players and not pushing buttons on other players. Kyle's different. One size fits all. Brock, what's your reaction to that?
My reaction is I don't know if Richard's going to ever give Pete and the Seahawks any credit for developing him into a Hall of Famer. At this stage of his life, at this stage of his career, and where he's at, Earl, Richard, I think a bunch of those guys are just going to give the previous regime with which they played, a regime that believed in them, a regime that developed them, that took a shot on Richard Sherman as a one-year starter at corner in college and said, nope. That's exactly the kind of competitive clay we can mold, and we're going to turn him and this entire secondary into the Legion of Boom and arguably one of the most renowned secondaries the NFL has seen. That took everybody. That took a general manager. That took a head coach. That took a secondary coach That took all of those people, all of that teamwork to build it together. It was not just one person and one incredible athlete. So, that does not surprise me. It's similar to what we've heard on the way out. You know, Richard has said a lot of this since he has left Seattle. Heck, he even said it when he was in Seattle, that the kumbaya meetings were getting really old at the end of his career. But those kumbaya meetings at the beginning of their career, when they brought that group together and they developed them, that should not be forgotten. And I think Pete and crew deserve an immense amount of credit for that.
Brock, I'd like to focus on this part of the quote. Pete has a way of making sure everybody feels good. This is Richard Sherman. Making sure he pushes buttons with certain players and not pushing buttons on other players. Kyle is different. He's one size fits all, end quote. Now, that's interesting because I would say that Pete's sort of customized approach worked rather well for Richard Sherman, given that Richard did not face an ounce of discipline after questioning the play calling of the offense on multiple occasions after a Thursday night game against Los Angeles. Like, Pete didn't do, like, that seemed like it was a very, like, that was a customized approach that was very convenient. He might have suspended another player, but he didn't do anything to Richard.
Yeah, it sounds remarkably similar to Mr. Wickersham's article a few years back with a number of the players that were not quoted in that one, talking specifically about how the quarterback gets treated differently, and they don't like it. Why does the quarterback get treated differently than we do or anybody else on the team? And you know what? The fact that Shanahan will dunk us, Jimmy Garoppolo, I guess that's what Sherman's after, and that's what he likes. But the fact that little Russell never got the criticism. He never got yelled at. He never got put down. He never got challenged in the ways that others did. It's really too bad because it stunted Russell's growth, obviously. I mean, if only Pete could have reached Russell and held him more accountable, maybe Russell would have been more accountable and a better player, right? I mean, Pete didn't get and hasn't gotten the most out of his 5'11 quarterback, so he must be doing something wrong in that way.
I like whiny Brock voice.
I kind of turned into Michael Bennett right there when Michael Bennett did his little whiny quarterback voice. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe everything I circle too many things always back to Russell, so you can debate
no,
that.
It's
but
totally...
I hear a lot of what we've heard from those defensive guys, and Richard in particular, now on the record and when he was off the record, that they got real tired of how Russell got treated differently than others.
You know what I'm real tired of? I'm real tired of him praising Jimmy Garoppolo and not ever once saying anything good about Russell. That's what I'm tired of. Like, not even once, just like, you know what, our quarterback's pretty darn good. Like, he hasn't even given him
Jimmy,
that. Instead, it's like,
Jimmy didn't blow the Super Bowl
for us. It was the defense.
Jimmy, they exchanged autographs and jerseys after the game. Don't you remember that? See, all this was made up. We made all this up. The media makes it so much more worse. Don't you remember the kumbaya they had after the game, exchanging jerseys, Danny?
Yeah, when Russell made him take his shirt off. He wanted to put his pelt. He made Richard take his shirt off so he could put that pelt on the wall.
Give me my legs.
It is wonderful, though. It adds to the beautiful competition between the two, the rivalry between the two, the rivalry that was so real when Mr. Harbaugh was there, that went away for a number of years as the Niners went dormant. And nice to have them back, and nice to have Richard to continue to stoke that fire.
Rock, we love you, man. Thank you very much. Please, more whiny quarterback voice in the future.
I'll do my best.
My legs.
Have a great day.
That is Brock Huard. His visits on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday brought to us by Toyota of Puyallup. And Blue 42 itself brought to you each and every weekday by Frost Brewed Coors Light. You're getting a little taste of the Richard Sherman sort of passive-aggressive, underhanded, needly comments.
I can hear the annoyance in your voice. Like, you don't like this. You are tired of this.
I just think it's revisionist history. Like, I think that if you, I think Richard is an incredible player. And I think that Seattle and one of the more fascinating athletes that I've ever covered. I think that Richard is incredibly manipulative when it comes to his descriptions of things and to constantly cast himself as the righteous person who just advocates for fairness. And it's not an accurate view of what's happened. The idea that Pete is someone who does have a different approach to different players is totally correct. And that's benefited Richard Sherman. Maybe more than, I mean, look, Richard Sherman, when he was a rookie, or I guess it was his second year, in 2012, there was a positive test for a performance-enhancing drug. And he appealed the suspension. He won the appeal based on that. There's not once that Pete Carroll has done anything other than soften the public scrutiny of Richard Sherman over different things that he's done that in other places would have resulted in him being singled out. Like, Pete has really gone out of his way to do what he can to shield Richard Sherman. Look, Sherman, after a game on Thursday night, said, "I don't like us running plays, throwing passes from the 1 yard line." Like, when do you ever hear a defensive player say, "I don't think we should throw from the 1 yard line"? So he went nuts on the field, then told the reporters why he went nuts in the locker room afterward. Then the next week, when Pete thought he was going to apologize, reiterated it all again. And he doesn't get any blowback. And then he's like, "Well, I just think you should have a one-size-fits-all." Well, if that's the case, your butt probably would have been on the bench.
I don't think he's entirely wrong here, though. Because I read that he's more of a straight shooter than Pete. And we talk to Pete all the time. We parse Pete all the time. Pete is always so polite and kind with how he describes what his players are doing. But to be perfectly honest, if I'm a player for a coach, I would like some honesty. I would like to know where I stand with that person, and maybe that coach does have true feelings about this player not being good enough. But when you're hearing this stuff publicly, do I know that? Am I confused as to what I need to do better? I wonder about that side of it. So I looked at this quote by Sherman, and I didn't really see it as a shot at Pete, even though there is a long track record of other examples of Richard Sherman talking, which have indeed been shots at Pete.
It's clearly a shot at Pete in my eyes. Maybe that is because of the history that when he says he's saying that Kyle Shanahan tells it more like it is. And my response to that would be, well, so did Jim Harbaugh. How did you get along with him? Like, how did Richard Sherman get along with a coach that told him like it was? That I think if Pete was that straight shooter, told you like it is, that I think that Richard Sherman wouldn't have played nearly as well or as long for the Seattle Seahawks because they would have gone sideways. I think Richard Sherman has the kind of personality that, and maybe it's different now in this point of his career, maybe that's what I'm a little bit resentful of, but early in his career, if you try to set yourself up as an opponent to him, he thrives on that. Like, that's exactly what he wants. And he wants someone to be the obstacle. And fortunately for Seattle, it was Harbaugh when Harbaugh was the 49ers coach. And then it was Crabtree. And then it was Revis. And all of the different rivalries that he had. And that Pete kept it from ever being, for the most part, fixated on the team or someone within the team. But even then, that stewed some. So I don't believe that a straight shooter would have gotten the best out of Richard Sherman earlier in his career. I think a straight shooter would have, like, initiated a stare down that would have resulted in Sherman being benched or Sherman being traded.
And that's totally possible. But we did rewatch that first game where Sherman took over the starting gig against the Cleveland Browns in 2012. It was because of an injury. So he was going to be on the field, and we saw what he was able to do when put into that role. You're going to be hard-pressed to remove somebody because of their, quote, antics, end quote, if they're delivering on the field, if they're performing. And he did say in this quote, "Kyle is similar to Pete in that the best man plays." The Sherman is going to be the best man playing and would continue to play, even with, yes, when he's criticizing the head coach or when he's criticizing the play calling. And I understand it doesn't go like that in other organizations. I feel like we are grabbing the past and we are pulling it into this quote. And I know that there are some people that have sour feelings about Richard Sherman. I understand that. I totally do, especially since he went to the San Francisco 49ers. To me, I look at him and I'm like, this guy's a Seahawks icon. And yes, he has sour feelings. Of course he does. They released him. You know, these are natural feelings to have, especially for a guy who creates obstacles, as you mentioned just a moment ago, when there aren't any. "Oh, Baker Mayfield didn't shake my hand." What? Look, it's on camera right here. But in the scale of Richard Sherman shots, I don't read this as a shot. I think that he appreciates Kyle Shanahan's blunt honesty here compared to Pete, who does have a way of making everything seem very sunshiny. And look, I don't have a problem with either strategy because both strategies clearly seem to work. Both teams have been winning, but I don't think it's a shot.
The reason the Seahawks were able to win in 2013 is because Pete was able to take a number of players who had not worked in other places. Marshawn Lynch was given away by Buffalo, and they gave him away because they didn't want to deal with him anymore. Doug Baldwin was undrafted because things did not – he got sideways with the coaches and with Harbaugh specifically at Stanford and lost a starting job. And Richard Sherman was a fifth-round pick. All of those players in part ended up blossoming because Pete is not someone who has an adversarial my way or the highway. I'm going to single you out. So to spell that out as a weakness, and maybe I'm inferring that part, but to cite that as, hey, it's refreshing to have someone that's a straight shooter, they're probably like, I bet you wouldn't have been saying that if you had had it when you were young and brash. And it was, and maybe this is a little bit of the resentment of watching Richard be the teammate I think he could have and maybe should have been at times as a Seahawk. Richard Sherman is a great teammate in some respects and was a great teammate in Seattle. The support that he showed other young defensive backs, the camaraderie that they built within the secondary, especially in 2012 and 2013. But by the end, the friction between he and the quarterback and some of the actions that he took, twice blowing up on the sideline, like those were counterproductive. And so maybe there's a little bit of resentment that I see him being the best kind of teammate now in San Francisco. And I'm like, oh, we broke him in. We broke him in, and he now is going to show them. And if he had been like that in 2015, maybe things, or 16, maybe things would have gone a little differently here.
You brought it up with Brock, and you're so right. I mean, praising Jimmy Garoppolo when you had Russell Wilson. Come on, dude. You know better than that. You focus on another part of this quote with Brock as well, because I saw that he's more of a straight shooter than Pete thing, and that was the one that jumped out to me and that's something that could be interpreted as a shot. You went a little bit further, this part. Pete has a way of making sure everybody feels good, making sure he pushes buttons with certain players and not pushing buttons on other players. Kyle is different. He's one size fits all. Did you interpret that part as a shot as well?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part of the shot, is that he okay. thinks that Pete just tells you what you want to hear. We'll continue this conversation. Also take a look at Josh Gordon, a really sad fact of something he put up for sale. That's all ahead here. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Jerry DePoto. We got Jerry DePoto on Thursday.
We'll talk show. To
him. I promise that we're not going to make it a ritual to badger him about Jared Kelnick, but it's very possible we may have to ask him about that at least once. The Mariners general manager joins us next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Well, it took really just one sound for me to get very, very excited about the prospect of Mariners baseball.
Oh, my God.
It was Jared Kelnick in batting practice. It's a couple days old, but it still applies. Kyle Lewis hit a bomb yesterday. We're going to talk to him a little bit later this afternoon. The fact of watching baseball get up and operating, and overall, I would say that despite some of the stumbles that we've seen and testing delays for some of the teams, I think we're seeing a return to work. And I think the biggest hurdle is getting back out and on the field. I really have been in some ways encouraged about the progress of baseball toward returning to play and the relatively low percentage of positive tests for coronavirus.
Yeah, definitely something to be encouraged by, and now it's just going to be a matter of keeping it this way. And I think baseball has its work cut out for it, because this is a lot more difficult to do in a non-bubble scenario. But if this works out, I also think it's good news for the NFL and for the other leagues that are operating outside of a bubble.
Well, let's bring in the Mariners general manager, Jerry DePoto's here for our weekly conversation with him. Jerry, how are you?
Good morning, guys.
We appreciate you taking the time to join us, and congratulations is the wrong word, but it's exciting to have baseball back.
I say congratulations. This has been an incredibly difficult process to undertake for a lot of people, ranging from the executive level at MLB, the PA, our players, and so many staff members. The way we are adapting to what is baseball in 2020 and projects to be. And none of us could be less excited, truly, because as we've said from the beginning, you know, everybody wants to play. We want to get out there, and it's been so fun over this last week watching the players run around. And I think we're starting to find a rhythm in what is a schedule that's very different to what we typically experience.
You've also got to be feeling really good about only 3 positive COVID-19 tests out of 60 players. And on top of that, while there are a lot of players across the sport that have expressed reservations or have decided that they're not going to come back, everyone is, as it seems right now, showing up ready to work.
Yeah, you know, we are very fortunate. And we had a pretty clean onboarding, and our intake process really couldn't have gone a whole lot better. I mean, we understood that there were going to be some positive tests, and there were. All of those people are asymptomatic, which is a real positive for us, and hopefully we can get them all back soon and resume full activity. But we've been so diligent about following the protocols, and not just the protocols that MLB has developed, but the protocols that exist with the city of Seattle and King County and the state of Washington. And I really couldn't be prouder, again, of Joe Borringer and Kyle Torgerson and Trevor Goobie, the people who really have made this all happen from the very start for the Mariners. And our players have been incredible. You see the footage, or you've been out at the park, and there's rarely a moment when they're not doing something that's full exertion, that they're not wearing masks, and everybody is exercising the appropriate social distancing and the like. They've been great in following the guidelines.
We've also seen something, and Jerry, I've waited the requisite amount of time before I play what has been my favorite sound of this entire week. It was, I don't know if it was deep investigative reporting, but Ryan Divish posted this, and it's one of your players taking batting practice.
Oh, my God.
I could listen to Jared Kelnick turn on that pitch all day long. That was absolutely awesome. It was incredible to see.
And we get to hear it a couple of times a day. You know, that just happened to be the most dramatic. It's you know, he hit that ball off the Hit It Here Cafe and in a simulated game against LJ Newsome, and it was one of those where as soon as he hit it, you know, your jaw just dropped at the sound and obviously how far it went. But we've had a lot of those moments in the early going. We had one yesterday morning with Kyle Lewis, who you guys have seen. He hits the ball as hard as anybody, and I mean, it sounded like a cannon was going off. And we've been pumping. There's constant music and some ambient noise in the background during our workouts from beginning to end. And, you know, to the point where sometimes you notice it's there and sometimes you don't. But the empty stadium does create an echo with the big bangs off the bat. And, you know, it's one of those where if you're not looking, you snap your head around like, who hit that? And, you know, it's fun when you have as much young talent as we have running around out there, and you get to see something fun and loud and athletic every day. It's been a real joy.
I know you guys have a process for Jared Kelnick and all your young players, but if we badger you enough every single Thursday when you join us, is there any way that we could expedite said process?
Absolutely. I'm a wall.
Yes.
Push me over in a minute. But I think the idea is to stay disciplined. And I said yesterday when meeting with the media, it's to stay disciplined in the development of our young players and with our plan. And sometimes, you know, I understand that I have to protect, you know, us against me, because our desire is to be aggressive and to move our players as aggressively as we can. But we do have to remember that we're playing in an unusually truncated season with a lot of circumstance around us that is out of anybody's control. And we have a series of young players who, and Jared happens to be one of them. I would say Logan Gilbert, perhaps Cal Raleigh, players that we thought had a real chance to be in the big leagues under normal progression right about now, you know, somewhere between right about now and September of 2020. And, you know, the prerequisite of that was that they played a half a season at whatever levels they were going to experience in the minor leagues, and continue that rep, the the repetitions and the maturation associated with that development. And while it's still possible that each of those three could play in the big leagues this year, we feel committed to the idea that we don't want to guess based on 3 weeks of a short spring training. We'd prefer to move slowly, and that's what we're going to do.
We're talking to Jerry DePoto, and we're gonna speak with Kyle Lewis a little bit later this morning. Manager Scott Servais talked about how good he looked coming back. Where is Kyle at in sort of his development? He had such a fast start in the major league level, and I know that he's come back from an injury. Where do you see the trajectory of his career headed right now?
You know, Kyle, when we drafted Kyle back in 2016, he was, a consensus top prospect in his draft class. He was the Golden Spikes winner as the college player of the year and truly a five-tool guy. He was a center fielder with huge power, could really run, very athletic. We felt so fortunate that he got to our pick with number 11. And then shortly thereafter, he experienced what we all know was the traumatic, three different knee injuries that result in multiple surgeries. And over the last 3 years, and I thought about this a lot yesterday, because he looks fantastic, the way he's running around in the outfield especially. He has each month since he returned to the field appeared to gain more confidence in himself and his body and how it works. And, he looks every bit the athlete that he was back in 2016. He's in great shape. No one's ever questioned his power potential that we've seen, play out in real time. But now we're starting to see a confident, multi-skilled, diverse baseball player. And, sometimes that's been evident, and sometimes you don't see that kind of self-confidence in Kyle. And my observation from spring training, the first go-around back in February and March, and what we've seen here now is that he knows that he is a complete player that can do all of these things and do them regularly. You can just see it, the way he carries himself and how he's running around in a very different way, and including the way he interacts with his teammates and the coaches. And I think Kyle has the potential to be an all-star type player. He also has a chance to be a real leading voice in our clubhouse. He's such a sharp guy, and he's so well-spoken, and he's so well-respected by his teammates that I don't want to use the tired phrase, he's a special player, but he really is a special player, and he's a special person and fits us so well, and couldn't be more excited about where he is and his progression. And we know there's going to be some bumps in the road, but at the same time, we know the height of what he can become is very real.
Man, those are glowing words, and we're going to talk to Kyle Lewis at 9 o'clock, so very excited to hear those words about it. And the last part that you mentioned there, Jerry, is something that I've been curious about, and it seems that this is a guy that you feel can be one of the positional player leaders. We know Marco Gonzalez is going to be a leader in this clubhouse, but when it comes to the positional players, who is going to rise to the occasion and be the player that a lot of young players are going to look and learn to follow?
Yeah, I do think Kyle has that type of presence. I think in a slightly different way, who perhaps his closest friend on the team, Evan White, has a lot of those same qualities. Quiet, do as I do leaders who really work their tails off from the moment they get to the ballpark. They're giving to teammates. A guy that I've seen just since we've been here over this last week who has a very different feel when he's out on the field right now is J.P. Crawford. And with JP works and has been working with the afternoon group, which includes a lot of our youngest players, guys like Noelvi Marte, our newest draftees, infielders like Caden Polkovich and Tyler Keenan. And one of my most enjoyable moments in this past week was watching an infield drill and having JP Crawford stop the drill and walk over after a ground ball and go through Perry Hill's program with Tyler Keenan. And, in real time, as Tyler is working through his ground ball progression and taking a normal infield, JP just stopped his defensive work and went over and took on the role of coach with a player who's experiencing, professional baseball for the first time. And I thought that was remarkable. A guy who's trying to make his stamp in the big leagues just called time out and went over and helped the young teammate. And, you know, that's something unique for a 25-year-old who's not had the experience to even play post-to-post in a big league season. To take on that type of teaching moment is pretty remarkable. And I was very proud of him. And we've seen a lot of guys step up. And I've said before, sometimes leadership comes in one body. Sometimes it comes from a group of people who all bring something slightly different to the dance. And I do think that trio, that Marco Gonzalez, Tom Murphy, and his deadline focus, we don't have him with us right now, but Mitch Haniger and the things that Mitch brings to the table in that category. And it's a good group, and I think that we will collectively find leadership that we've always looked for.
Well, it's one of those things that we're so excited to see. We're excited about it in spring training, this young group, watching them grow together and take those learning steps. Jerry, we're so happy baseball is back, and we really look forward. We'll talk to Kyle Lewis a little bit later and catch up with you again next week.
All right, guys. Have fun with it.
That is Mariners general manager Jerry Dipoto. Baseball does return. The Mariners are going to play their first intra-squad game, get ready for their season. 710 ESPN Seattle is the only place to hear it. Rick Riz, Aaron Goldsmith have the action. That's Friday at 2:30 p.m. Did Richard Sherman take a shot at Pete, or am I hearing things? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're trying to figure out if Richard Sherman took a shot at Pete Carroll in a Jim Trotter article that was about coaching styles that players appreciate. I thought if there was a quote that maybe did that, it was when Sherman said of Kyle Shanahan, quote, he's more of a straight shooter than Pete, end quote. But Danny, there was another part that you focused on. I'll read it. Pete has a way of making sure everybody feels good, making sure he pushes buttons with certain players and not pushing buttons on other players. Kyle is different. He's one size fits all.
I'll be interested to see how that works out. If that is how Kyle Shanahan approaches it, that it's my way or the highway. It's very clear that Kyle Shanahan is an exceptionally smart and offensive coach, specifically what he's able to do. That how you handle and manage a roster full of players, I'm not sure how efficiently or how often that works. And I point to the fact that Bill Belichick has been so much more successful than any of his other assistant coaches. Bill Belichick is the ultimate sort of one size fits all, right? Like, he has got a program that you fit into. He may change his game plan from week to week, but what he expects from his players, the type of sort of dedication, the type of effort, like that is pretty unwavering. There, you don't see guys going to New England and acting out. When Ocho Cinco went there, he was suddenly a much different kind of public. He was much more reclusive. He wasn't nearly as outspoken. Maybe Kyle Shanahan is going to be that guy. It's also possible that it's so early. He's had 1 year of success, so he hasn't had to deal with any of the, okay, tell a guy who's been successful in the past that he's going to have a lesser role. What happens if Richard Sherman gets benched this year? Like, that's not inconceivable, right? Like, last we saw from him was Sammy Watkins running past him down the sidelines. I wonder if Richard at that point is going to appreciate the straight shooter that Kyle Shanahan is, and maybe he will. I just think it's because Kyle Shanahan hasn't had to tell anybody something they don't want to hear yet.
And here's what's interesting. If you Google search Kyle Shanahan rub people wrong way, you'll get a lot of stories. You'll get stories about him in Washington. You'll get stories about him in Atlanta. You'll get stories about him also in San Francisco. John Lynch, his personality may rub people the wrong way. He may come across as cocky. And you're right in that. That style works when you're winning. If you're not, what happens then? Now, here's the thing for Kyle Shanahan. In his defense, he made Matt Ryan look like a possible Hall of Fame quarterback, which he won't be. And with the 49ers this past season, he turned a team that really wasn't good last year into a Super Bowl loser that had a chance to win that Super Bowl. And you know, you can make some comments about in the Atlanta Super Bowl and in this past Super Bowl about how maybe he could have been smarter in specific moments, but the track record recently has definitely worked.
Do you think that his approach is it's just a matter of two different flavors, and that's what Richard's saying, is like one is vanilla, the other one is chocolate swirl? Like, that's that we're talking about two different, and not that they're not that one's better than it's just two different flavors, because I see it as a subtle shot.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got. And it's interesting, given what you explained about how he was with a guy like that in Jim Harbaugh at Stanford, you would think that that would be something he would never want to deal with again. But we also have to remember that Harbaugh is one of the biggest hardos to ever coach in the National Football League, drinking glasses of milk, wearing those khaki pants. He has a very backwards, almost 1940s sense of football about him that I feel like is unique among a lot of coaches, and he really rubbed people the wrong way. I mean, imagine being a successful coach and making the 49ers relevant for the first time in over a decade, and you get run out of town. That's what happened with Harbaugh.
There's no doubt about that. It's just, it's funny because I think Richard got the benefit of some of Pete's sort of more individualized coaching. And I think looking back on it, he looks back at it and says, well, that's Pete just telling guys what they want to hear. I'm like, well, yeah, you're one of the guys he told what you wanted to hear, because most coaches would have flipped out if he blew up on the sidelines, let alone explain that he blew up on the sidelines for throwing a pass from the 1 yard line. And then after having a conversation about it and realizing that he's going back and repeating about why you blew up on the sidelines, because you didn't trust them throwing a pass from the 1 yard line. And he didn't, from all intents, you didn't even have to sit down and miss a snap.
Given his outspoken nature, that he lasted as long as he did here, and that he was released after an injury, not necessarily after one of these incidents, is something else. Because if he was somewhere else, I think if he was in New England, they would have appreciated his short-term efforts, but he would not have been a long-term fit there. And I think they would have moved on from him after like 2 years or so.
And Seattle was better off for it, right? Like, that's the one thing I would look at. And when you say, like, it's just two different approaches, man, like, what? Look at what Seattle got out of Marshawn Lynch. Like, Buffalo gave him up, and he's probably a Hall of Fame running back. Like, they were done with him. So the idea that Pete is sort of this pushover or he's not effective, man, that approach gets the most out of guys because Pete doesn't let it become a test of ego. He doesn't let it become like, you've got to do what I say, and you have to do it publicly so everybody knows that I'm in charge and you're listening to me. Because he does one thing for one guy and takes different approaches with someone else, it ends up allowing guys to stay on the field.
Different strokes for different folks. I don't think it was a shot. I could see how people would interpret it as a shot, just given Richard Sherman's track record, that's for sure. He's Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Danny and Gallant right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Danny and I are very excited about the thwack of Jared Kelenic's bat. But talking with Jerry DePoto just a moment ago, he's really excited about Kyle Lewis, the young Mariners outfielder who finally will be starting the season with the team. He's going to join us next right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.